very good morning to you. Welcome into the programme with you right through until 12 midday. We're going straight to Brussels to see what the atmosphere is like there following the shooting overnight. We're also going back to the situation which was resolved at 3:30 a.m. this morning. We'll be focusing on the Lamb Institute here in University Hospital Galway as well. Caroline Lochnan will be joining us, as will Professor Michael Kearns. Joanna Downs joins us. Also on today's programme, Pádraig Mulligan joins us, Assistant General Secretary of the Force Union. And we have Micheline Sheehy Skeffington joining us. Galway Gardaí, you're looking for your assistance and much more between now and 12 midday. All the comment lines are open, including our text line if you want to get through to us on 086 38 33 55 3. It's a Tuesday morning. A very good morning to you. Now, a very good morning to you. This day week, we were coming to you live from the European Parliament as a guest of MEP Maria Walsh. And we woke this morning, indeed, went to bed last night, woke this morning with news that there was a shooting in Brussels last evening. Two people had been killed and two Swedish fans, indeed, who were in town for the match. And indeed, just breaking news, as you heard there, the suspected gunman was shot by police after the Brussels attack. But MEP Maria Walsh joins us on the line this morning. Good morning to you, Maria. What's the atmosphere like in Brussels this morning?
It's difficult. I mean, we're sitting here as an institution in Strasbourg this week for our second October plenary. But of course, our staff and many advisors and the city at large is still under level four of a terrorist attack. So. From my understanding, the Belgian police have not lifted that as of yet, but it was, of course, a little bit easier following reports that the suspected perpetrator and murderer was, as they said, neutralized and is in hospital getting treatment. But, you know, you said there in the introduction, so we had a number of fans in town. Belgium is a big soccer country, so yeah. A number were out in the streets and, of course, in the stadiums for the UEFA Euro qualifiers against Sweden and Belgium. And from my understanding and speaking with team members here who had friends at the match, the players themselves called it off once reports broke of the shooting, and then each fan was held in the stadium for their own safety, and then police escorted each home. And of course, the city where it was in Skalbeck, a certain area just not too far away from the Parliament where you were last week, was under intense Garda or police presence.
And again, where the shooting took place, was it far from the Parliament buildings? Because, I mean, we spoke last week about the police force and the amount of police on the ground there and security officers and otherwise. I mean, it's the building itself is very secure, but was it far from the building?
No, I mean, where the within a 20-minute walk, Brussels itself is quite small, so within a 20-minute walk, you would be in the Parliament, and I know she wouldn't mind me saying it, but you had the pleasure of speaking with two of our interns, Kira and Jenny, last week on air, sharing their experience of living and working in the institutions, and unfortunately. One was a couple of blocks away from where this happened, and is quite scared, naturally, quite terrified. Yeah. And while I didn't see anything, you certainly have the sense of fear and the added scariness to this is the suspect claimed and went live on a social media site, I believe it was Facebook, and declared he was doing this in honor of and the revenge in the name of Muslims. And making it quite a national issue, because in Sweden right now they're reviewing law where burning of the Quran may or may not be allowed to continue to happen. So there's been some ongoing struggle in Sweden, and it's terrifying when you have this. But the fact that it's just terrifying last night when everything is shut down because of people's safety, which is welcomed, but. Hard to believe that a city you sat in aired in live last week is now still under terrorist level four safety.
Well, you look after those interns. I can only imagine the shock that they've gone through being so close to it. And again, speaking indeed with some of the people who joined us last week in the Parliament, some of their families don't want to go to Brussels because of attacks like this. But look, we just have to hope and pray that this stops very soon. Maria Walsh, thank you indeed for joining us, MEP, and thank you for taking time to join us today on the programme. Again, if you've been affected by that or otherwise, there's loads of details online, so there is on this one. But the suspected gunman has been shot by police after the Brussels attack, or neutralised, as the MEP said, from there. Now, if you want to get in contact with us, 086 38 33 553. I want to move, though, swiftly along to Minister Anne Rabbitt, because a strike by health and social care workers in the community and voluntary sector, which is due to begin today, has been called off. The good news is that the Workplace Relations Commission, the WRC, they ended discussions there after 3 a.m. this morning with an agreement on pay as well. Minister Anne Rabbitt, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith, and thanks for having me.
It's been a tough couple of weeks for you on this one when it comes to Section 39. And why did it take so long to come to a conclusion at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Because we didn't want the strike to go ahead by no manner or means. And the fact that everybody was in the WRC and were working through the process, and like the pay parity piece was one piece of it, but also the mechanism, Keith. So it's that going forward with our next pay talks, that people that work in the Section 39s or the Section 56s, that there's a parallel process. That parallel process is awful important, so as we don't find ourselves back here again, where there'll be a differentiation in pay. It was that mechanism, the wording around that mechanism, is what took the longest time in the end to get that right for everybody, Keith.
Yeah. I mean, we spoke to the Taoiseach yesterday morning on the programme. He was going to meet you in Tuam at the time, but he did say that he was very confident of a positive outcome. So, I mean, there was an offer of 5% put on the table that was rejected. 10% was the ideal figure. Settled at 8%. When will that be paid?
So we're backdated. 3% is going to be backdated to the 1st of April. The next 2% will kick in on the 1st of November, and the final piece then will be the 1st of March. At that stage, building momentum, 2024, the national pay agreement process will have worked its way through. Parallel process will have been put in place for the Section 38s, or for the Section 39s and the Section 56 workers. So the mechanism then that when we negotiate one, everybody will have the benefit of it, that are part of that parallel process. So that's actually the now, that has yet, the unions have to send that out to their members to ballot on it, and they will be recommending acceptance, because they played a huge part, to be very fair to the unions. They played a huge role in the early hours of this morning in getting the wording and the mechanism. We all wanted that mechanism, that nobody would get left behind again, Keith. That link is very important.
Absolutely. But is this for all Section 39s now?
Yes.
So all
no,
39,
it's for health no. and social care. Health and social care, Keith, let me be very clear. The industrial action, the negotiations that took place last night, was all to do with health and social care.
But other employees within that sector then, they're not getting this increase?
No, it's only people that are employed within health and social care, Section 39. So when I talk about is people working in Ability West, and I think he had them on during the week, people in Ability West, people who are part of the Meals on Wheels, people in the family resource centres, people in daycare centres for older persons, that is health and social care. And to be quite honest with you, they're doing similar, exactly same work as people who are providing services in the Brothers of Charity or the HSE. I'm using local organisations because everybody knows them there locally. So that is exactly what it is. It is within the health and social care. There was a national pay agreement or agreement done for Section 39s earlier this year for 5%, and that's where health and social care didn't accept it, because they recognised, and we recognised, they were doing exactly the same work. Unfortunately, it came to having to have the organisation served with industrial action, which could have taken place today, very close to it, on it, and that's why a resolution needed to be found to prevent that happening.
All right, it's a good outcome. It's certainly a good outcome for the people we spoke with last week, and John spoke with last week, and the people we spoke with yesterday as well, who were having they were having serious concerns, and they were calling on you and others indeed to come up with a solution.
And to be very fair, we have been working on it for the last 3-4 weeks, myself and Minister O'Gorman, and I have to say to the officials within my own department, to particularly to Colm my ASIC, to Minister O'Gorman, and to Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue, like, we weren't left alone, and to the leaders within the parties. Everybody knew that we're at a crunch space. Last week was the budget. And to be honest with you, last week I delivered for service users that would be attending services to get new money for that. Last night was actually to get workers money for the workers that are doing the same work as people who are working in the HSE.
All right. Thanks, Annie, for joining us, Minister Anne Rabbitt. Good news, and I'm sure those waking up this morning will be delighted that that help is there for them today. But thank you, Annie, for joining us today on the programme. 9:21, we're coming to you live from the LAM Institute today here, which is the research institute for breast cancer research. And we'll be talking a good bit about that between now and 12 midday. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into the programme. We're coming to you live from the LAM Institute today, and I'm joined in studio by Professor Michael Kern and indeed Caroline Lachnan. But Professor Michael Kern, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
It's good to be with you today. We've spoken a lot about the LAM Institute and the work that's going on here, and we're physically here today to see what's going on.
Yeah, it's an amazing place, isn't it, Keith? I mean, this is the major translation research facility on the grounds of the hospital. It's probably the only one of its kind in Ireland, and it's people ask me, what's translational research? Well, it's near patient research. It allows us to actually ask the questions and answer them in an environment where we have both a laboratory and a hospital functioning together as a research resource.
I know I was over with you a couple of weeks ago, and you brought me in. I mentioned this on the radio at the time, but you brought me into the building and you brought me through, and you've got so many academic people working on research here.
Yeah, we have 56 PhD students among with multiple research supervisors and clinicians involved in a whole variety.
56.
Yeah. So it's an amazing state of the art facility that allows us to do undergraduate and postgraduate research and allows us to answer some of the key questions across a range of cancer areas, but of course, particularly breast cancer.
And again, research is one thing, but you need funding for it. And that's where the likes of Caroline and Joanna and all the other team that are around you to raise much needed funds to keep this research going.
Yeah, so I've been so very fortunate over the last 20 years in the context of the National Breast Cancer Research Institute, which goes from strength to strength. It's a national organisation, but primarily based, in the west of Ireland, supporting our research enterprise.
And there is progress being made, but progress when it comes to research is slow, but there is progress being made.
Oh, well, look, at in my working lifetime, I've seen tremendous change in the management of breast cancer. We've gone from an environment where 50% of people were dying from the disease to an environment now where, thankfully, less than 12% of people who get breast cancer succumb to it overall. And we've understand the disease much better. We understand that there's four major subtypes and that each of these need to be treated differently.
Give us that statistic again, because that statistic is very important, because some people presume when you get cancer you're going to die, but give me those statistics again.
Well, the facts are now in the Western world, in Ireland in particular, that more than 80%, about 86% of people who get breast cancer survive it. Unfortunately, as I've said before, the stats are that the west of Ireland is still running a little behind the rest of the country, and we need to bridge that gap with the creation of the cancer centre here and the accreditation programme around the Organisation of European Cancer Institutes that the NBCRI is supporting.
But that's wonderful news that needs to be shouted from the rooftops, and I know you do it on a daily basis, but people need to absorb that in and take that success rate. Because people are being diagnosed on a daily basis.
That's right.
You meet them at the coalface.
Yeah, I mean, things have changed so much. When I came back to Ireland in 1999, 32 hospitals were delivering a cancer programme. That reduced to 18, and then there were 8 cancer centres developed in 2006. Our challenge, as you know, Keith, and we've talked about this, is that the infrastructure in the institution here needs improving, and nationally, we're on the National Development Plan from that point of view. But all great research programmes underpin clinical programs, and it's essential that the correlation between research And clinical outputs, you know, so that we basically, I suppose what I mean is that research improves the outcome for individual patients. And that's the essence and core of what we do.
But you can see that. But I mean, again, the fundraising is very much part of it. I suppose the government can't fund research for everything.
Of course. And one of the great things is to have a self-help programme, an environment where people across the west of Ireland support each other in developing a programme that's fit for purpose to look after themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, the NBCRI is so fantastic in that, and the foresight and vision of Fred Given and people who set this organisation up, Tom Joyce, and O'Quenya, you know, and it has gone from strength to strength since over the last 30 years.
But hadn't they great vision to do it back then?
Yeah. Vision, strategic vision. And in order to, and you know, the essence of that is in this building here. Who would have thought that we would have the translational research facility on the grounds of the hospital? It's great credit to everyone that's involved.
Is it ever open to the public to come in and have a look around? Because I think people will be in awe of it when they see it. I know members of, you know, you've had press receptions and all that here. But to see the work that's been done and the PhD students and the work that they're doing and the progress they're making.
Yeah, we have open days. The university is great with that, and the NBCRI hosts events here, and you know, we try to show the public what we're doing.
Carolyn Lachlan, I'm going to come to you, chairperson indeed of the National Breast Cancer Research Institute. Congratulations, first off, you've done a lot of work on this.
Thank you, Keith. And well, it's a privilege, to be honest with you, to be associated with such a worthwhile cause, and you know, to be able to support in whatever way we can the inspirational work of Professor Kern and his fantastic team here at the Lamb Institute. So it's, you know, it's a real privilege really to be involved.
Is it his magnetic way of doing things that kind of keeps you all going, because he has that energy?
Well, that's certainly a factor. There's definitely no saying no to him anyway. For sure, Michael's energy and his passion for the research is absolutely a motivating factor. But I think it's broader. Michael would say himself it's broader than Michael. There's a whole team
course,
there now. Really fantastic colleagues, Roisin Dwyer, Aoife Lowry. There's a whole team there, and all of the PhD students. So yes, it's absolutely the researchers. For me, as you know, in the day job, Keith, I work at the University of Galway, and you know, and support passionately the research mission of the university every day. But it's great to see the other end of it. So what NBCRI has shown me is the real impact that research has on real people's everyday lives. So yes, the researchers are very inspiring, but who's maybe even more inspiring than them are the patients.
Yeah.
The patients who come back, because most of the people who fundraise for us are patients who've worked with Professor Kern, who've been treated by him or by his colleagues, and who really want to come back, give something, make sure that the journey is that bit better for the next patient who sets out on it. And that's just, it's really inspirational to see that.
It is, but no journey, Professor Michael Kern, is the same for any patient. Is it all different, the journeys?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally, Keith. And I mean, I suppose we talk now passionately about a personalised approach to treatment, so that every individual gets their own treatment plan. Now, that's based on what kind of tumour they have, what age they are, what social supports there are. And one of the big challenges, of course, is that in looking after people across the west of Ireland, is that we have to look after people from, you know,
Donegal down.
Yeah. From Donegal and Connacht across a whole range, and we look after people in the western Midwest and into the Midlands. So there is a personalised approach to people from both from the point of view of the treatment they require and how it's given and how we deliver care.
But again, it's working, and you're getting in early. And I mean, that figure of 86%, I'm going to go back to that all the time, that figure of 86% gives people listening to this today that woke up this morning, ladies, and found a lump and went to the GP and are concerned. That figure is something that should be top of their mind.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, but also from the point of view, one of the great things about being involved in cancer research is that we get new markers, so we get new insights based on what kind of tumour people have and then how better to treat it. So that, you know, we've gone through a phase, you know, Keith, I think people would have understood that breast cancer chemotherapy was kind of de rigueur, like everyone who got breast cancer needed chemotherapy. Now we've moved into a phase where people with the commonest type of breast cancer often don't need chemotherapy at all, because we can do the Oncotype DX score, which looks at 21 genes on the tumour. And if the score is below 25 and the woman is postmenopausal, then she doesn't need chemotherapy as part of the treatment. So it's very interesting to actually see where we're gone with that. And then, you know, looking at the triple negative group of breast cancers, one of the big challenges is to kind of arrange markers, or to identify markers that we can arrange treatment around. So, you know, and hopefully as time goes by, we'll get better in that space.
And during your career, have you had wow moments where you you said to yourself, I never thought I would see this in my lifetime?
Many of them. A few examples would be immediate breast reconstruction, where we save the skin and the nipple and the breast, do a mastectomy and do a reconstruction that looks pretty similar to normal. And then some of the issues around that, the types of reconstruction we can do. We're looking at new ways of how to generate safe breast tissue using adipocytes. That's fatty cells usually from the tummy that we can use. And we have sort of regenerative medicine approaches to that. So that example, the Oncotype DX score, with looking at the genes in the tumor, looking back at the day when I started out with Frank Gannon and Fred Given, looking at individual tumor types, extracting the DNA and identifying the different subtypes of the estrogen receptor in those tumors. Then throughout the years, looking at different aspects around the sentinel node biopsy, where we stopped removing all the axillary lymph nodes and just took out the few that mattered. Lots of different ones, some of them related to surgery, some of them related to treatment. But what's quite amazing now is when I walk into the multidisciplinary team on a Thursday morning and I see about 25 people in the room, and they're across the, Donegal, Sligo, Castlebar, and here, all talking about individual patients in the west of Ireland and putting a fit-for-purpose management plan in place for them. So there's lots of different things that have changed greatly, Keith, and I think we're moving into a phase where cancer management is going to get better and better.
And that wouldn't have happened without the NBCRI?
Not at all. It is the one essential step in the whole part of this, is to have a strong research program and have a community support.
Caroline, you as chairperson, wouldn't that give you a great lift, though, when you hear that story coming from Michael there?
Oh, absolutely, Keith. It's just really inspiring to hear, well, to hear how far the science has progressed and how far medicine has progressed. That's what it's all about, really. Making outcomes better for patients is really what we're about. So it's great to be able to make that difference, whether that's funding new researchers in Michael's team, funding students, funding part of this building, funding part of the breast check unit. It's really, really great to see the good use of that money's being put to.
You're going to be back with us later on, but the long-term plan, which we spoke about here a few weeks ago, is infrastructure, which you're equally passionate about. Where are we with that currently?
We're moving in the right direction, Keith.
It's on the National Development Plan.
We're having an approach where we're trying to figure how we can deliver it on the hospital site here. I'm very confident and hopeful that this will happen over the next few years. I think all good research leads to better clinical outcomes. So one of the critical challenges is that research in its own won't cure people, but it's a great help. So we have to have the clinical program in place too. But there's a great story to be told in the context of the number of people involved in the breast cancer program here now. We have 6 surgeons, equals numbers of radiologists, medical oncologists, radiation oncologists. We have a great new radiation oncology building here now.
I just passed it. I came part of Canscare West this morning, and I walked by it this morning, and it looks magnificent. Is it up and running?
Yes, absolutely. It's absolutely, and it's one of the major
cogs
in the wheel. Oh yeah, there's no question, and it is. But it shows how proper, modern clinical facilities need to be structured and put together. So we need to do the same across the whole range of the cancer program, and we will over the next few years, Keith.
But you brought me on a walk a few weeks ago. You showed me where it could go, and you've spoken to the Minister for Health, and you've spoken to Hospital Management and Tony Canavan and all of that. But is there a movement there? Are they listening?
Yes, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you be confident in the next 5-6 years?
Very confident. I know it's going to happen now.
That's good news. You're happy. He's. Do you know what I see, Carla? He's settled.
Well, that won't last, Keith.
That's what worries me. Because he was animated a few weeks ago, And but rightly so. Well, he's not doing it for himself.
Absolutely.
He's doing it for us.
It's for patients, Keith, on the west, northwest of the coast of Ireland. Yeah. Because outcomes, although they're fantastic and they have improved, and that 86% figure is great, they are still worse. They're still materially worse. Your outcome is materially worse on the west and northwest coast than it is on the east coast. That's not fair. That's a situation that needs to be addressed.
Is it the lack of infrastructure?
Absolutely. It is, Michael, isn't it?
I think, you know, the truth is, in terms of the wonderful young doctors that we're educating and developing, and then we're seeing them leave the country at the moment, Keith, and some of them saying they can't come back or they won't come back. The truth is, if we get proper infrastructure, they'll all come back. The west of Ireland is an absolutely marvellous place to live and work, and we have an opportunity now to, you know, create the kind of infrastructure that will allow the people here to have a really good health care outcome, and I think that will actually change things for everybody. We have an amazing city, and the truth is that our healthcare infrastructure needs to be brought to the level of a modern European city and region, and we need to do that over the next few years.
There's a willingness to do it, and they're going to do it now, you're telling me from there. But when you hear Caroline saying, you know, that the outcome for the west of Ireland, because of the lack of infrastructure, That is actually wrong. Something needs to be done in the short term.
Yeah.
Politically, something needs to be done in the short term to enhance what's here.
We're headed in the right direction now. I mean, it's on the National Development Plan. The government are behind it. And the signals we're getting, Keith, is that this is going to happen.
No, and I accept that. But somebody who's diagnosed, you're going back over to the clinic and you will diagnose somebody in the next 24 hours that they've got cancer. Wouldn't you like to think that the kitchen sink, which you will throw at it, wouldn't you like to think, though, that it will be equal to the East Coast, the type of treatment, that the infrastructure, treatment, everything.
Yeah. It has to.
Because you have to face those people.
No, it has to. But, you know, when we came here, we didn't have the Lamb Institute, which we're talking about today. We didn't have the breast unit or the breast check program. That's state-of-the-art at the level. It's full now, like most things here. But we have an opportunity to create a cancer centre for the ages here.
All right, I've held you longer than I should, and we will talk to you later on as well. Caroline, you'll join us later as well. I'm bracing myself now. Joanna Downs is up next, so I'm just bracing myself for that interaction. But anyway, she joins us shortly. Professor Michael Kern, thank you for joining us. Caroline Lockdown, thank you for joining us. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. A very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme with you right through under 12 midday. We'll come to you live from the Lamb Institute today. And seriously, I mean, just listening to Caroline Lockdown there and Professor Michael Kern, we're in a wonderful place and we need to get into a better place indeed when it comes to infrastructure. Anyway, Joanna Downs joins me. She's a former director of the charity and she's one of the driving forces behind the Galway Volunteer Fundraising Committee, who manage many Galway-based events. And she's lost for words this morning, so you are. Joanna, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. How wonderful to see you again.
You're lost for words.
As per usual.
I said to Professor Kearns, I have to brace myself for Joanna arriving into me today. You've been involved for a long time.
I would imagine at this stage, 21 years. Like Ithel Fahey, who's still on the committee with me, I think Ithel has been involved 26, 27 years, and I came on after Ithel, so it's definitely over 20 years that I've been involved, and loving every minute of it. And
but you've worked in medicine all your life, so you have, from working here in the University Hospital Galway. You're very good to give of your time like this.
Work was an interlude in my life. This raising funds for breast cancer research was my life, you know, and that's why I think I loved work so much, which I was a clinical nurse manager too here for 32 years in this hospital. But getting involved with breast cancer research just gave me such an outlet, meeting incredible people and knowing that I was making a difference for outcome, for research, for cancer, for breast cancer research. And that's, I suppose, all of our motivation motivation, really. And I suppose then it became a personal thing when 14 years ago my sister was diagnosed with breast cancer. Yeah. And I remember her going to back to see the oncologist after 5 years treatment, and she said, "I'm finished today," and she was all excited. And professor said to her, "You know, I'm sorry now, Marianne, another year, 5 years, research has shown." So that's why it's so important, the research aspect of it, is that it changes every day, and it makes it life really good for so many women, and their outcome is really good, and they live a lovely life.
Absolutely. I mean, Professor Kearns was saying, and I'm going to use it 100 times more, 86% of people diagnosed with breast cancer today will survive it.
Which is incredible. You know, really? And let's aim for more.
Yeah.
Let's go higher.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, myself and the committee that we have in Galway, and I'd like to name them out later, Keith, if I may. And as I know you'll tell me, you can't stop me anyway. And
I have an on and off button here. Don't worry a bit about that. Will you stay with me? Because I want to go to Anne Duchesne, who joins me. And she's a third year medicine student in University of Galway. And good morning to you. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. You're from Canada, is it?
Yes, from Montreal.
And what brought you to Galway?
International studying. I think it was a great experience to try to experience another culture abroad. And I've always wanted to pursue medicine, so two birds, one stone. I came here to Galway to study medicine.
And is it what you expected?
Everything more. I didn't expect much from it. I was sort of jumping... didn't know what was catching me, but I was so pleased with the sense of community here and the friends I've made, and the university itself is amazing lectures and state-of-the-art facilities, and it is really a treat to study here.
It is, and I mean, you're in the Cancer Society within University of Galway.
Yeah, I'm currently co-auditor of the Cancer Society with the university.
And what does the Cancer Society do then?
So we help in part the NBCRI, so we have a strong partnership with them where we help at their fundraising events such as Swim in Pink and Race in Pink that's coming later this month, but we also help elsewhere, and we throw on our own fundraiser. So last year we threw on Box in Pink in late March, where it was 30 students that learned how to box and fought each other one night, and then we raised over 10,000 euros by selling tickets and donations. And
wow. And again, a lovely thing, Joanna, there. I just come back to you in one second. But what was a lovely thing that happened there? You came in and you're sitting in the studio here with us outside the Lamb Institute. But Professor Michael Kern came back in, shook your hand, and said, "Thank you for your support." That must mean a lot to you.
Oh, of course, it means a lot, especially from coming from him. And it's a tight partnership. It's been going on for a few years, but especially last year, like, it's gotten a lot tighter. We try to help the NBCRI in any way we can, providing support, providing bodies for the fundraiser, and they do so much in return, and just the whole committee is all supportive and always welcoming to their events, and they try to open doors for us, and it's so great to have an ally like this here.
Yeah, I'd like to come in there if I may. You know, last December we were doing a big band sound in the Salt Hill Hotel, and thank God these young people came in, because we had to zap the tickets as they were going in, you know, the QR code. I've learned since, but they just took over from that point of view, and they were there. They're such a help. They're there for us if we need, can get this, can you do this, can you help here, and they really are a lovely bunch of wonderful young people.
Yeah.
You know, which is very, very important.
But then you do, I mean, Michael said earlier on, like the likes of Fred Given and the likes of Anna Cunha and the founding members, I mean, they had vision, but you need new blood, like Anne Duchesne coming up here.
Absolutely. And they're, you know, it's wonderful there. These are just young people that are, because it was Anna O'Connor that invited me onto the committee, and I was not going to say no to Anna, Lord of Mercy, and her. She was such an amazing lady. And I worked alongside Mary Bennett and Maureen Clancy and all of those for years, and it was just amazing.
Yeah.
But we are, you know, the Galway committee, we organise so many events throughout the year. And can I mention one or two of them? Okay,
ahead.
The first one.
I would never stop you.
No, I know you wouldn't. coming up on the, first of all, on Friday morning, the 20th, we have a coffee morning in the Salt Hill Hotel. But that evening, we have, in conjunction with Bron Thomas, a fabulous fashion show of, you know, drinks and food and knowledge. That's on, tickets are €75 each. You get them at breastcancerresearch.ie. www.ireland.ie/Brown Thomas. Then on Sunday we have our famous swim in pink. You know, as you know, last year we brought in €44,000. We want to double that this year. We want to make swimming pink nationwide, and it's getting there nationwide because of our promotion. Because there's Louise Griffin, whose idea this was, and she is just really, as she says herself, giving it sock. You know, and we're really doing very well. That's going to happen next Sunday morning.
What time is that?
We want to be from 9:30 to approximately 12, but getting in the sea at 10:30. And swim in pink. But you don't have to come to Ladies Beach. We want you to do it anywhere. Get a basin of water at home. Dip your foot in a basin of water. But wear a little pink as you're doing it. But the most important thing is to register. Yeah. You know, register swimminpink.ie, www.swimminpink.ie, and you get a most fabulous, fabulous swimming hat.
Now, you mentioned your committee there. Do you want to give them a quick mention, those that you're working hard with?
Pardon me?
Your committee, you said you wanted to mention them.
Yes. Oh, can I name them? There's Ethel Fahey, who's been 25 to 26 years with the organisation and still helping us. Una McDonough, Laura Quinn, Orla Smithick, who you'll be talking to later, Michelle Murphy, Deirdre Smithick, Siobhan Eagle. And as you said, you know, we always need new people. So this year, Hazel Curran has joined us, Joan Kennedy has joined us, and Faith Fahey, who you'll be talking to again later. So, you know, and it's like that. It's great. I'm asking anybody that's out there, because while we may not have breast cancer, we will know somebody that will have breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And as one supporter said, as a woman, I will support breast cancer because it may not affect me, but will affect somebody I know, be it that their mother, their father, their brother, their sister. And for next year, we have a huge plan. We have Valentine Ball on the 17th of February next year, hoping that's going to be a mass ball. We have a walk in pink Mother's Day is the 10th of March, pink afternoon the lodge at Ashford Castle Sunday the 9th of June, prompt to paddock 30th of July Salt Hill Hotel, pink afternoon in the Ardilon on the 2nd of August. Now there's one thing, Keith, none of these fundraisers can be done without sponsorship, and I would just, our sponsors are too numerous to mention, but just including Galway Bay FM, the support we get from you is amazing.
Super. I want to come back though to Anne Duchesne, and thank you for that, Joanna. But I want to come back to Anne Duchesne. So your third year then, are you going to stick? Are you going to stay with us
in Ireland? Definitely considering it. There's many options to consider, going back home to Canada or staying or even maybe somewhere else. But I think everything here, everything looks perfect, and I'd be more than happy to stay here and practice and join, who knows, maybe the NBCRI on professional level.
Into the future. Yeah. So you're not going traveling next year then?
I'm going on placement elsewhere with the university, so I'm going to Letterkenny.
Good on you.
But that's part of the medical curriculum. I'll be back in a year.
Oh, so you go to Letterkenny for the year then?
Yes.
And it's the next year then that you have to come back here?
Yes, and stay I'll here. Come back.
All right. Listen, thank you both for joining us today. Anne Duchesne from the University of Galway, Cancer Society and a third year medical student, and thank you for being you. And Joanna Downs, as always, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. And thank you.
Behave yourself.
For your support. As always,
anytime at all. I was going to say behave yourself, but there's absolutely no point in telling her to behave herself. None whatsoever. She'll never behave herself. Anyway, let me just go. Why are there roadworks being carried out when people are travelling to work, college and school, etc.? This morning was disgraceful at the Oranmore Dual Carriageway. Get someone from the council on. It's really just not on. And Keith, this caller, said to us today, I care for someone with a disability. I get nothing, as well as the poor person I care for, and they get nothing either. So it's okay for others, but not okay for us. And this caller said, so there you go. We'll be going back in the next hour, by the way. We'll be going back to that whole settlement which was reached at 3:30 this morning, and in relation to those care workers. And we'll also be joined by Rose Foley and Micheline Sheehy Skeffington. We're looking at a pioneering event there, so that's coming the way. Padraig Mulligan joins us, Assistant General Secretary of the Force of Western Regional Union as well, Regional Office. He joins us in response to that event. Philip Duffy, Sinead Cassidy and others join us in relation to fundraising. And Dr. Laura Barkley joins us as well, a lecturer in the University of Galway and principal investigator with the National Breast Cancer Research Institute. So all of that and more between now and 12 midday. Let's head towards the 10 o'clock news and join the team there. The comment lines are open today if you want to get through to us on 091 770 077, and you can text us to 086 38 33 553. Do so straight away. It comes up on the screen in front of me here, and we'll talk to you just after the 10 o'clock news. Stay tuned for that and more to come.